On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
It's a tougher training environment now because there's now 15 trainers in Victoria that you'd be just as happy to give a horse to as the top two trainers.
But if you've got city class races and decent horses, why wouldn't you bet there? I'd rather bet there than on a biased track.
Yeah. Should jockeys be wearing masks now?
Is there a racing rule that overrides the society community rule? So I would imagine that they will have no choice but to ride in masks, you know?
What decision is made in the current climate? Do they take the cash or do they continue with their current partner who does an outstanding job and is also a partner in racing.com?
Why not just pour the resources into tracks that we know race well and don't have as many issues as others, make them as good as possible rather than trying to appease every country town that has a cup meeting because they want to have a cup meeting.
The world of the triple place parlay has there's a few bumps in the road have appeared.
Welcome to The Verdict. What a massive hour we have coming your way. So much to discuss. We'll talk about what stage four means for racing, but we'll also look back on what was a couple of outstanding performances as far as that the racing was concerned. We'll try and find you a winner up north for the Darwin Cup, and the two gentlemen who do it each and every week are here with me once again. Matty Stewart, how are we?
G'day, Mick and Mick.
And Mickey Sharkey, you're here.
We do it better than anyone else within a 5K radius, of course.
Of course. Now, speaking of this lockdown period...
Are we absolutely sure about that? 5Ks is a fair breath.
This time, especially, Matty, we need everyone to band together. It's all for one. It's no selfishness. There's no I in team, especially when we are in these uncertain times. Anyone has any information, we want it to be shared and we want people to be helpful, don't we?
Yeah.
Mick Sharkey is sitting on a red card.
What?
Friday Form Focus, there is no mention of any horse that he may have part ownership in.
It's not very good.
And then
I told you that
I get a text message on Saturday morning.
Yeah, it's coming back to
did
me.
You back Sharky's horse? Because have a listen to what it did in the first race at Donald.
On the Powerball, and then followed by Chat Up trying to get into the clear. Sunburnt the leader. From on the outside, Joe Cat trying hard. Further back to Chat Up and the Mally Root who are running on. Wild Charlotte gets a late split with a bully face, goes after Sunburnt and hits the front. Wild Charlotte from Sunburnt and Joe Cat, and Wild Charlotte wins the first at Donald. A neck to Joe Cat. Sunburnt wilted late to run third. And
how much did you have on it?
Guess what it paid, Matt?
$0.
$12.
The crux of the matter is, how confident was Sharky and how much did he have on it to establish how much he left us out?
Post-race, I got a text message with, you know, those emojis? Post-race, six bombs, you know, explosions.
Who'd you get that from?
And bags of cash.
Yeah. Oh, right.
From Mick Sharkey.
Now, you could cast your mind back, Michael, to a Friday Form Focus about 3 months ago when you tried to ambush me with mail from the Bald Eagle about Wild Charlotte trialling up at Cranbourne and, it's a machine and this and that.
He was on
it. And what did I say that day?
You said we're going to give it a couple of dead runs.
I said,
and then produce it at Donald.
I said, she's not very good.
I thought integrity had caught up with you. Look, the bottom line is he's left us out in these difficult
100%.
Times and we're entitled to have a think about Charlotte.
I'm glad she was able to win.
Full disclosure.
A race somewhere.
But well
and,
done.
The girls watched it because I bought that horse out of the paddock at Three Bridges as a weanling, and I've got this great photo, I'm trying to find it now, of my two girls in the back of the four-wheel drive, and Charlotte has got her head in the car, getting a pat and a kiss from the two girls, and then there she is, winning a race on Saturday, which is quite nice. So it was good to be able to show the girls that and say, this is what the baby horse has ended up doing.
He tells us the lovely story to deflect from the leave-out factor.
Yeah, that's a massive deflection.
Exactly.
Well, the evidence of that photo, too. I reckon you probably made that up.
Anyway, we want full disclosure, and that's what we expect here. Gents, let's talk with what stage four may mean. Now, we're still waiting to find out what time the Premier has his press conference today. Specifically in relation to workplaces and industries. And for those in racing, it'll be a very nervous period because a lot is hinging on what he has to say about stage four. Now, the positives for racing are the fact that it has continued for the last 3 to 4 months without any COVID positives. That will stand racing in really good stead. We put this to the racing minister, Martin Pakula, a couple of weeks ago when he was last on the program about what would occur to racing if we did hit stage four. This is what Martin Pakula had to say.
We've been racing uninterrupted now for the last 4 months. since the virus broke out. We've seen no cases connected with the racing industry. And I think racing has demonstrated that with the biosecurity protocols they've got in place, in terms of those activities which are at risk of creating virus spread, I don't think racing is anywhere near the top of that tree. So I'd be really, firmly put in the view that even if there is a need for further restrictions, pointing at the racing industry as being a big or any part of the problem would be unreasonable.
It's positive. And I had a brief text exchange with the minister last night, and he said, look, he's got his fingers crossed. He's working very hard on ensuring that racing continues, not just thoroughbreds, but harness and also greyhound racing as well.
I think the only thing that can take it the other way is if, with this extreme sense of alarm and emergency and that people haven't complied, whether they make a sweeping decision. Okay, that's it. 6 weeks, everything's on ice. That's the only thing that I can think of that can go against what you've said about the fact that we have been supremely compliant, successful, no incidents within the racing bubble and things like that, is whether it is just an aggressive fist on the table decision that says, right, everything's on ice for 6 weeks, and that includes all of you, you know. So whether that's the only thing in the back of my mind.
Hairdressers, you know, are remaining open.
That's a staggering one, isn't it?
So
I need a haircut.
It's not every single workplace is shutting down, and no one can preempt what the Premier is going to say today, but I think there will be certain industries that won't shut down, but there may be further restrictions on them, whether the construction industry and that. As far as racing is concerned, it would be a huge call to put racing on ice for 6 weeks at this time of the year, because that would essentially end the spring carnival.
Yeah, spring carnival would be off, and racing may stop in terms of a competitive facet of it, but what does it mean for the sport behind the scenes? Do horses still get work? Do they still get housed in stables? Do they all get sent to adjustment properties? What's the capability of those adjustment properties to take? Like, I work for one, and if we had 50 horses turn up in 2 days' time, you're thinking, well, hang on a sec, what's our expectation? Well, there's a little bit to work through if they want to turn the lights off.
The 8 p.m. till 5 a.m. curfew, I would imagine, excludes staff who go to work the horses.
That's an exception.
Yeah. So I imagine they're fed and housed and exercised as normal and just tick over as they have. Did New Zealand have the same thing where they were able to tick them over, or did they have to put them on ice and just feed them?
No, you could do light exercise.
Yeah. Tassie was the same.
Well, you need to for
light,
for
light exercise
animal welfare.
Won't keep them fit.
So no, and that's why the spring carnival would be the issue. And I mean, even if, I mean, this lockdown period is scheduled to finish, I think, 17th of September. So you can rub out the first couple of group ones for the spring carnival. That's why it is a huge decision to be made. I'm confident, hopeful, probably better description than confident, that racing will continue. When you add all of those things into the equation, and the biggest one being that there has not been one COVID positive. If racing had been shown to be a spreader of the disease, I think it would be in a lot of strife. But the fact that it hasn't, due to the protocols, should hold it in good stead.
I think that's the paramount thing. I think if it's like a war room situation where we are just now solely focused on stamping out coronavirus, I don't think the state government's going to give too much of a consideration about the continuity of the spring racing carnival. I don't think that's going to be a primary concern or even a concern at all. So
but
I think
jobs and the financial impact of that will have the concern.
But I think most of us are the same now. I think I'm not even as interested as I was in the continuity of the spring carnival. I just want to beat the virus. I'm not that fussed about what ripple effect it'll have on racing and carnivals and backlog and all that sort of stuff. I want to beat the virus, and then we can pick up the pieces afterwards. As far as discussions about what does it mean for these races and that race and horse movement and internationals, I now don't care. I just want to beat the virus. And I think a lot of people are conditioning themselves to that thought process.
I think you still need to have some care factor about what it will make the spring carnival look like. And I think if we speak openly and honestly, while there has been a lot of hope and a lot of people working behind the scenes, I think the fact or the thought of crowds is almost
Oh, Gaunce
totally,
coming into one.
Totally didn't that leave the room? About if I hear anyone mention, oh, how are we going to manage to get these internationals here one more time, that is now on the scrap heap of my consciousness. I don't give a stuff about that. I don't care about the crowds now because I've given up on that. I think we all have, in the back of our mind, given up on that idea of crowds. So, again, as I said, there's things that we were caring about 3 or 4 months ago that are now insignificant. We want to beat the virus and then racing will resume and pick up the pieces at some point and then that's all that matters.
Are you, on a more personal note, are you now concerned about the situation we are in as a whole in regards to the virus?
Yeah.
When you read and you hear situations that there's a 30-year-old in ICU. Previously, the connotation or the, I suppose, the expectation had been that this basically affects elderly people, but it's been shown that it's not. And I think I heard something this morning that in Melbourne yesterday we had more coronavirus positives and community transmission than what UK did over the weekend. Consider that with the population differential.
I don't think you want to get it. Generally speaking, if you read some of the first-hand accounts of particularly journalists in Europe, there was an Australian journo that was working in London that got it early days, and he wrote quite a dramatic piece about how he felt like it was trying to kill him.
Mm.
And I don't really want to get something that feels like that, no, to be honest.
That's right.
Nor do I want to put my kids or my family in that threat. So
the first show I'd seen on this ever was about 2 weeks ago where they spoke to, two or three 35-year-olds who had it, and they spoke about the horror of having coronavirus. So, and the worry that it mutates. Like, you know, we've nailed it, we've got the vaccine, we've got it in, and then, whoops, it's turned into something else. So, yeah, I got to say, I'm preoccupied with those thoughts at the moment. I'm not preoccupied with the nuances of the racing industry particularly, although we do want it to continue, all that sort of stuff, the Spring Carnival, but I'm being distracted by the bigger picture, I have to say, yeah.
Well, we won't know anything definitively until the Premier speaks later today. On tomorrow's program, we will hopefully have all of the answers for you because the Chairman of Racing Victoria, Brian Kruger, is joining me from 9 o'clock for an extended chat, basically for at least half an hour to 45 minutes on the fallout of what is announced today and the ramifications and what that does mean for the Spring Carnival. Things that now our mindset may have changed about, but we still need to get clarity on, like crowds, like international participation, like prize money, because prize money is being set at the pre-COVID period when I think most people were expecting crowds to return and so forth. What does it mean for turnover? There was an article in The Age today which is positive in the fact that major bookmaking firms are saying that they have never had in the past quarter, the last 4 months, higher turnover returns in Australia during this COVID period. Now, that will stand the racing industry in good stead from a funding point of view, but we'll get more clarity on that as well. So
and even when
that's
the other,
all for tomorrow.
Even when the other sports came back, racing still raced ahead for the turnover. It wasn't like they, you know, diluted the amount of money that was going to racing across the other sports, which was the fear. The racing turnover kept ahead of the pack. So that was an amazing stat, wasn't it?
Absolutely. All right, so we'll discuss more of that tomorrow with Brian Kruger, because at the moment, we're all just hopeful. There are no definitive answers that can be given. But if you've got any thoughts, SMS at 0416 90 50 52. Let's talk about the racing now, gents, on the weekend. And, gee, that was a stunning Grand National yesterday. A blaze. I was so disappointed that Tally Ho just made that bungle at the last, because I got the feeling he was just looming into the race and we were going to have a grandstand finish. What were your thoughts on the Grand National yesterday, gents?
It's the game, though, isn't it, with jumps racing? You've got to be close to perfect, particularly at that elite level.
And carrying
you
that weight.
Yeah, and carrying that weight. You can't afford to make any mistakes. He made a mistake at the last. It's heartbreaking for those involved, but he's had a great season, and so's a blaze. And I think as much as the error was disappointing that we didn't get to see that last little bit on the flat, potentially the two horses going head-to-head, a blaze led throughout and was very bold in doing it and was challenged at times as well. So it was a monstrous win.
What does it take to dislodge Pateman from a horse?
Jeez.
You need a jackhammer, don't you?
It was unbelievable. My gut feeling is that he was just starting to rally to make a race of it, Tally Ho. I didn't feel that for the previous 800 metres. I thought he was just off him and not really. But there's something that Pateman said to me a few days ago. He said he's got this low centre of gravity and he's like a bulldog and he gets lower and lower and he just sort of gets into his work. And that was exactly what the horse was starting to do. I think, who knows whether he would have won, but he was going to make it a hell of a... He wasn't going to get towelled if he'd cleared the last, was he? You know.
And let's not forget about the runner-up who ran a stunning race as well. And when they all resume, fingers crossed, Tally-ho's pulled up well. We haven't heard anything to the contrary. When they get to the Grand National Steeplechase at Ballarat, they're going to be closer in the weights. It's going to be a bog track. It's going to be a waterlogged track. It is so exciting to think about that contest and the return contest of those two that will go head-to-head. There has been a bit of fallout from the race, and I know Lee Horner, there was a bit of controversy yesterday, and the stewards actually quizzed Lee on his rides on...
Felix Bay.
Two of them, yeah, Felix Bay, and also BT Junior, who just looked like he got in an awkward position coming down the back, and you don't want to find yourself in any situation in a Grand National where you're losing momentum, and it just took a while to get going, and he was the horse that was running on. You probably wanted to be a few lengths further or closer, because he went so close last start, and he was a bit unlucky again yesterday.
Well, Felix Bay might be the wild card for the Grand National Steeplechase, because this is the inquiry that's an interesting one from stewards. I just want to get the actual report up. What happened was Lee Horner was questioned by the stewards, and I spoke to James Hitchcock this morning. They're looking at Betfair, they're looking at everything. They're going to try and get as much information as they possibly can, because they feel, even though Felix Bay and Lee Horner have a knack of getting back and running on, he just totally lost sight and was so far off them, but then with the 800 to go, he had a lap full of horse, but he was 15 lengths off them and made some ground. And there was a Twitter spat yesterday between Lee Horner and a couple of punters who weren't being overly, they weren't being overly aggressive, and he came back pretty hard. There's no evidence of those tweets today, but the stewards are aware that they existed. So there's going to be an inquiry into the social media policy as well, involving Lee Horner's response to people on social media that questioned his ride. But it would have been a frustrating watch if you're on Felix Bay, because he was never within a suburb of the race. So
well, that was a strangely run Chris, wasn't it? With the Dominator going out so hard in front, which is
his pattern
that he races.
That is his pattern. Nothing really changed there.
Horner lost sight of them. When they took off down the hill, he lost sight of them again.
Yeah.
That was the problem. So there is an inquiry, yep.
Rematch, who wins? And I just got a text message, Nick Lovett, saying that Tally-ho did pull up a little lane. I'd say it was probably him crashing through that fence. But
it's just an awkward landing.
We haven't heard anything about that it's going to put in jeopardy his Grand National Steeplechase. So I still think at this stage it is all roads still leading there. A bit closer to the weights, maybe more on level weights. A Blaze Twinkle Toe.
Is it a two-horse race?
Oh, BT Junior.
Yeah, I don't think BT Junior's out of it.
I don't think Felix Bay will be out of it too if he gets there and suddenly latches onto the field for once.
The way BT Junior's emerged at his last couple of runs, and yes, he's sort of done the same thing. He's got going very late and ultimately too late. You just get a feeling that he's building up towards everything working out right in the run, jumping well, being close, that length closer that perhaps, you know, gets him there at the finish. It's going to be probably the most anticipated jumps finale that we've seen in a few seasons.
It's a funny one, though, because it's in the context of a sport that's getting less and less observed by most people, too. It's still at Sandown. I saw, I think it was Amy Yagi or Amy McDonald, one of the jumping Amys, was tweeting yesterday about why can't we have this race reinstated back at Flemington and turn back the clock and all that sort of stuff. But the world's moved on and jumps racing has its place. And it's not the same place it had 15 years ago. It's a smaller circuit. It feels like a smaller season, and I think a smaller band of participants. And because we didn't have Warrnambool this year, we didn't get that feeling that of the community of jumps because they weren't there.
That's a great point.
It just feels like it's a loose-ended thing at the moment. I got interested in that race yesterday, but it came out of nowhere, didn't it, for a season that we hadn't, to be honest, asking you guys, have you taken any real notice of the jump season other than yesterday?
I have, with the good horses, and I think we are lucky to have some of the best jumps horses that we've had going around. But you're right, most of the jumps features are on a Sunday or midweek these days, so they're not on the Saturday main stage. But that was the most excited, or the most exciting and anticipated race for me on the weekend yesterday, that Grand National.
No, it was for me too. Yep, absolutely.
That was a highlight yesterday, the highlight on Saturday. And Maddie, you were a little bit ho-hum, a little bit jury is out. You can't be now, Brooklyn Hustle at the Valley on Saturday.
My only thing was that it had been a long time since she'd popped up on our radar. Like, she was a precocious two-year-old, and she could have gone one way or the other yesterday, like most of them do. She could either have done what she did, which was more unlikely than likely, I thought, or she could have just been something that we thought was promising a year ago. So, no, she was great. She was fantastic. She's obviously taken that step, and she was the most exciting winner at the Valley for sure.
Spoke to our good friend Anthony Mithen in the moments after the race, and just try to get a sense of what actually had gone wrong with the horse. And there was an issue with some bone chips that she had to have removed. She seems to be a bit of a chronic horse for pharyngitis, which is effectively a throat infection. And when they treated her with a most recent bout during the spring, she had an adverse reaction to the antibiotics and basically had a dose of the scours and was pretty ill. So they were running against time to get her back to full fitness, and she was always just that little bit off, that little bit off her coat, little bit off the weight she was carrying, just all over, probably running at about 70%. So, and that was during the spring when she was running, you know, running well. Coming out of that into the autumn, she had gave her a little bit of time, and we see the benefit of that on Saturday. I'm not sure, heard Dwayne Dunn say on the drive-in, he thinks she's a Group 1 horse. I think the chance for her is if it's in that COVID spring, and maybe we don't get all the best sprinters here. There have been a few retire, as Dwayne pointed out. She might get her opportunity.
Have to be at the weights in something, wouldn't it?
Like, yeah.
She'd have to get into something in the spring where she got a weight advantage.
It would have to be. Mytho made an interesting point that they've had her genetically mapped through the Equinome mapping system, and she's a CC long, which means she's a sprinter, but a sprinter that should run, you know, 1400 or
so
a touch further.
Clark with no
so
weight?
That's, well, they've got that in the back of their mind. Yeah, I think wherever she goes next, if it's the race at the Valley, there's either 1,000 or a 1,200 metre stakes race, she'd go to one of those. And if she was to win one of those, it catapults okay into the Rupert Clark. All the other option that's sort of sitting there at the end of the month is the Cochrane, which could also lead into a Rupert Clark. But there's a few options there.
Did the data match the margin and the impressiveness of it? Because it was a weak race. Yeah,
it was a week. She needed to, regardless of the position she got herself in, you know, by virtue of her racing pattern and how the race panned out, and Dwayne Dunn's mastery to sort of, and nerve to hold that line and wait for a gap, she needed to explode like she did. If she was going to catapult and leave that grade and get back to stakes grade and be a force, she needed to put them away like that. So it was good to see her do that.
Yeah. I thought those small fields at the Valley when the race gets happening at the halfway mark with Victoria Star. I know I always sing his praises, but Malum's just such a good jockey. Like, it sort of unfolded his way, but he sort of pressed a bit early on Al Ghulail, and he went, nah, I reckon I'm going to put myself in the gun.
Well, I don't think anyone saw Vacillator leading.
I thought because he was race fit and back in distance, I thought he'd be aggressive.
Well,
and,
it certainly didn't pan out well.
No, it didn't pan out well for him, but I didn't surprise me that he tried to use his fitness to dominate the race and get going early. It certainly backfired, but Victoria Star was bloody average, wasn't it?
No, it was disappointing. Absolutely.
It doesn't often happen where, you know, connections say, we're just going to try something today, and it turns out well. It doesn't happen like that. Hard Landing was good.
Very good. I think I don't know whether that's the strongest form race. I think the market told the story on the South Australian. There's a bear in there. It might be pretty limited.
I think so.
It's got away with a couple of races.
Hard Landing is a Group 3 winner with good form, though. And to see him come back and do that's, I think, a good sign going forward for him. The other race that was probably maybe a little bit flat as far as the big chances were concerned was the 6th with Wilmot Pass. A little arguably unlucky. Condos Express probably didn't race to the level that he thought many thought he would, given his Valley form.
I don't think we should waste so much time on this meeting.
Dexalation just goes whack at the end there.
Well, Mahamadeus was probably the performance as far as the training was concerned with Nick Ryan, although As someone who had Polly Gray and Tavi run in the quaddie, and not Muhammad Ayes, it was an excruciating watch. I just wondered whether they pressed the button a little too soon, trying to chase after Moss and Dale. But gee, there were a couple of interestingly run races and some mid-race moves on Saturday, and the tactics, which I think ultimately probably backfired for a lot of the connections there. But it was a ho-hum meeting in the overall scheme of things, and it starts to ramp up from this Saturday. It was almost the bridge meeting.
But that it always is, isn't it? And if you get one little highlight out of this program each season, like a Brooklyn Hustle, then it's you leave it going, oh, righty, hey, that's good enough, because the rest of it is, it's effectively benchmark racing.
I reckon it was a good advertisement for Nick Ryan again, the way he's been able to manage this horse.
Got his mask right this week.
Last week he had the schnoz out.
He looked like someone looking over a fence. It was very strange.
I think the biggest issue, and it's been bubbling around for a long time, is the Sydney tracks.
SMS here, just on that point of view, with all the prize money in Sydney racing, surely they could spend some money on the tracks. They are a bloody disgrace. You've been banging on about this for a while. It hasn't been difficult to see, because it's been a heavy 8, heavy 9, heavy 10 each and every week. I don't think it had rained for the last 4 or 5 days. It had been sunshine in Sydney. And again, the track raced extremely poorly. Is it time for them to bite the bullet in the short term and say, you know, let's go to Newcastle, let's go to some of these big
Scone
country tracks that perform so well on a Saturday and have some better racing?
I reckon, I don't know if there is any evidence yet, but surely there's going to have to start being some evidence that punters are deserting Rosehill and Randwick.
We don't get any betting turnover figures out of New South Wales.
So we've had this discussion last week as well. This has been a burning issue for years now, where the authorities over there have no interest in the boring topics of fixing up tracks. They're so preoccupied with the more glamorous sort of things to put their money into, like the expensive races and things like that. And even the track, Nevesh is a fantastic track curator and all that, but his attitude seems to have recurringly been in recent years, it's the Sydney weather. We've copped it again.
They have had a very wet period.
Well, they've had a very wet 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's time to recognise that.
It's subtropical now, the Sydney climate, isn't it?
But that's what I reckon. So it's Flemington, Caulfield versus Rosehill, Randwick. What are the differences? Is we've got the two best trying tracks in the Southern Hemisphere, and we don't particularly need them because we don't have all that rain. Sydney absolutely needs them, and they have never, ever invested the money or the technology into trying to replicate Caulfield and Flemington. They need Caulfield and Flemington. So I know that there's a project at the end of the year. I was having a chat to Nevesh a week or so ago, and he's the manager of all the tracks up there now, where it's not going to be just a little band-aid job. They're going to do something much more significant at the end of this year. But I'd like to know what that is, because we've seen with Eagle Farm and other tracks, you can do a big project, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work. Look at the Kenzo track as well. So this is their chance before people should start chucking rocks at them, because they've had a lot of time now. If they don't do something that makes a lot of sense, then it's their own damn fault. Absolutely their own fault.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what they say publicly, because we haven't heard anything, really, have we? And I know that the focus has been on coronavirus up there. A few of the media starting to say a few negative things about it, which we don't see too often in New South Wales, but there needs to be more pressure put on them, because I agree with you, Matty, the way the tracks have been racing it, it's not good enough.
There was a misunderstanding on social media as well with a late scratching that might have led us to a long-range tip on Saturday when David Payne wanted to scratch Montefilia from, I think, what race was it here? Race number 8. Now,
it got clarified.
It got clarified because initially it was reported that he wasn't happy with the apparent bias on the day, which sent Twitter into a meltdown. But then he came on, I think he was on RaceNet, and he clarified and said, I never said that. I said that the track was too heavy, she's far too good a filly to risk. And then when prodded, he said, well, I think she's my VRC Oaks filly this season. So she does have a lot of ability. That was going to be a little kickoff point. Might be one to keep an eye on. We didn't see her on Saturday.
They didn't downgrade the track to the rating that he wanted to scratch it from, though, either. They kept the heavy 9.
And that's why she needed the permission. Sharky's trying to find us a winner now. That's good. A little pep talk has worked at the start. He's now starting to bring things out into the public, which is what we do here on RSN 927. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Verdict. More to come after this. Welcome back to Racing, the verdict on Racing Pulse. Just got an update. Peter Morganti, who was a part owner of Felix Bay, Matty, has just tweeted that he's been retired. What? So Felix Bay out of that race on Saturday has been retired. He said the crisp was our target race, but his chances were diminished by the drying conditions and he jumped accordingly compared to his form on wet tracks. Disappointing, but that's racing. Has always been ridden the same. He owes us nothing. He's an 11-year-old now who can enjoy retired life.
I will follow it up with Amy McDonald because it does coincide with a inquiry where they were called in to explain and whether there's anything more to the story. I'll certainly try and find out later on today.
All right, so I appreciate Peter, part owner, putting that out on Twitter there as well. A couple of quick ones I want to get through. We touched on it briefly on Saturday morning. The Hugh Bowman situation, I think everyone's, we've kind of done that to death, I think. But there was an SMS just on Hugh Bowman. Sharky, your thoughts? We spoke about it briefly on Friday. You're satisfied with 6 weeks for Hugh Bowman?
Look, I'll leave that to the people that want to determine the penalties. If that's what they deem suitable, then that's what it is. It's us saying it's not enough, it's more than enough. It doesn't change anything. It just keeps it circulating in the social media gutter, doesn't it? There was some rubbish floating around on the weekend. You just yeah, it's done. What's done's done. It's a terrible situation, but we need to keep going forward, don't we?
And the other news in regards to rides, the apprentices, Theo Nugent, Lockie King, that race at Caulfield a few weeks ago, the stewards concluded their inquiry into that, and both jockeys have escaped without any penalty in regards to that race.
Well, there was a little backstory there too, where because they're in the green team, they had been restricted from, I remember talking to, I think it might have been Matt Hyland or someone else, saying these guys had stuck their hand up to not attend track work and trials and so on, and if they're a little bit ring rusty on the day, you've got to factor that in, and maybe hopefully the stewards did.
Yeah. He rode the same horse, Lockie King, on Saturday, Surreal Image, and rated it perfectly in front, just wasn't quite good enough on the day.
Yeah, stewards said that they could not find a standard of error of judgment that would be culpable riding. Therefore, they escape with severe reprimands. Gents, outside of the gallops on the weekend, did you see this boy in action on Saturday night, Ride High?
Ride High dashed away around the turn, got Ted in front. Sir Letty can now offer no more resistance. He's soldiering on to try and hang on for second. In third place was Courageous Saint, but look at him go. Ride High on his winning way, 9 in a row. He smashed the clock again. Look out, track record. They're ticking over the clock. Ride High smashes them. He's a jet. He's broken 150. Look at the time. 149 flat for Aldebaran Park. He has obliterated the track record.
Incredible. And watching Twitter blow up on Saturday night about this horse, it just reiterates the only thing that can really get people involved is a star. And that's what Ride High is. And we've also got, whether we get to see the Lochinvar Art match race or not, if I was Ride High's owner, I'd say, I'll take on anyone. Bring it on, because he is the most exciting horse we've got. And
there is a horse called Bling It On, who's a champion.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it was, I can't remember, I think it was Shane Tritton, who's over in the States, in a Twitter conversation with Anna Hamilton, saying if they brought that horse over here, the Yanks would never see anything like it on our fast tracks, the times he could run.
Yeah, that's right. Look, you're half right, but, House of Ancelot, Blacks of Fuck, all these champions smoking up, they all came along and were champions as well, but they didn't get us excited. There's something, the ingredients are different here for some reason, and you know, there's the simple things like talking something up can get people interested. We've been talking this up and that's great, and the harness people are getting involved and the smashing the clock and so on. I watched it with one of my kids. They're always a good litmus test, because you know, they would rather watch the footy, to be honest. So, and Maxie just said, wow, he's smashed the clock, Dad. He's made, and his legs were really quick and all that sort of stuff. And there is something simple about smashing the clock in any sport. That's what anyone can relate to. Like, even if I'm not interested in something, if they break a world record, I go, wow, that's no one's gone faster. So I don't necessarily think they need the match race now. I think if these two clash...
What?
Well,
come off it.
No. We can't come this far and not have a match race.
No, why don't because, you want to see the,
no, because
them clash?
Can I explain,
Mike? All right. Oh,
because the hype is there now. We've captured people's imaginations are captured by these two horses. So that's what we haven't achieved with the other harness champions in recent years. If they clash in a race now, it'll still be massive. because that is it. Lochinvar Art versus Ride High. So the actual match race may be superseded by an actual race.
But you take luck and other horses getting in the way.
Just go toe-to-toe.
Yeah.
8 times out of 10, you're going to have, in a race, you're going to have one leading, one on its outside, or one leading and one on its back. That's how it'll unfold after 400 metres. So I think the more likely outcome now is there'll be a race.
He's won 14 from 15. What the hell happened the other time when he got beaten?
Oh, well, I'll need Hamilton to text in with that.
Surely, watching
problem
the replay from Saturday.
Doesn't look like he can go with Ride High.
No, well, it's now balls in Lochinvar's court because he looked brilliant last week. Mm. So it's a great little bit of tennis that they're playing with their performances. It's fascinating to see.
But do you know what I'm saying? Like, I've been captured by the secretariat thing again because he smashed the clock. It wasn't the margin as much as anything else. It was the record and the margin and the line with Kieran Perkins in the pool and all that sort of stuff.
I'd love to see that line instituted. And you don't get to see it very often in racing, but there would be something that, if for any horse, it would click into recognition on our coverage that a horse was getting close to a course record or track record, whether it be in the harness, which it happens probably a bit more than the gallops, that the line comes into play.
Well, here's something for .com to look at, because they've got all the Acardi benchmark, Thingo data and all that sort of stuff. Well, why not in the replay after the race when the team gets there and breaks down the race as it's happening, why not have the benchmark line and the world record line on the screen so when they take it through, instead of just talking to these imaginary, oh, this is up and 4 lengths above benchmark, which to some punters doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, visually,
show us,
it's a lot easier to
show
recognize.
Us with a visual line or two visual lines, a record line, a track record line and a benchmark line.
But even the second division of a maiden at Horsham, like say you've got the first race over 1200, is it difficult for the second race to have the line of what they achieved in the first race?
Sure, it's not.
It's a gimmick, but it's sort of an interesting one.
No,
though,
but it's not a gimmick, because what it does is it makes it easier for people to get their heads around what running time is. Well, what is time? What does it look like? Let's show you with a visual. This is the standard that these horses, you know, at their very best, need to be able to reach. Wow, look how far below they are. Wow, look how close they are. Yeah. It immediately puts into the viewer's mind a measure, a tangible measure of quality.
Exactly.
And
that's
speed,
what I'm saying.
Which
exactly
is what we're talking
right.
about.
100% right.
And if you're
simple.
Trying to get
it's
people simple. Into the sport,
yep.
show them something they can see and immediately understand, not these gobbledygook words that and numbers and phrases that, unless they're paying for a product, mean nothing.
And I'm not interested in the Grand Circuit or the Inter-Dominion necessarily. I show some interest, but I am interested when the fastest goes against the fastest, because I understand it, you know? So,
well, I think a lot of people would be in favour of that. It's a good point you make, Sharky. The technology would be there. It would be dollars, and that's what racing needs to look at. What it invests to try and entice more people and to make it easy to understand.
We're running our own TV station. Surely a couple of lines on a graphic isn't that much of a bank breaker.
Oh, I think there'd be a bit more from the technology side in regards to getting that to
well,
work.
One of the Nicks will text in.
But you could,
Nick Lovett or Egan, they know that back end better than us.
You could pay for it.
They're listening, right? They're probably listening right now. Send us a text, boys. Tell us how hard it would be to do that.
But it's a smart investment if
that's
it is
right.
a desired thing.
Exactly.
You know?
Hey, let's try and, speaking of smart investments, make a couple today at Darwin.
Oh.
Rob Gilberti is the man who trains Itza Him, who's looking for back-to-back Darwin Cups. Rob, good morning to you. For us who are down here in Victoria, can you just paint the picture about what Darwin Cup morning is like up there?
Oh, blue skies, boys. As you can hear, a bit of wildlife in the tree above me. A couple of cockies, but blue skies, sun is shining, birds are tweeting and squawking, and, happy days. It's probably 25 degrees and looking for a top of 32 and a full crowd capacity for what we're allowed on in such a situation with the COVID.
I was going to ask about the human wildlife, for lack of a better term, Rob, because in a normal year, it gets pretty loose up there.
Yeah, last year was a bit of an experience. Naturally, things will be a bit different today. I think we've got tickets were sold out a couple of days ago, and they're expecting around 7,500. I think that's what the government's allowed them. So, looking forward to it. Good, big days racing.
Gee, you've done a good job with Itzy Him, Rob. He's a 10-year-old now after celebrating his birthday on the weekend. He's looking to go back-to-back. His lead-up run last start was a flashing light. How's he going compared to this time 12 months ago?
Oh, probably pretty hard to gauge. Yeah, personally, I would have liked an extra lead-up run, but, yeah, he had just a couple of things that were bothering him, so we avoided that and pressed on and just went to the metric mile. But overall, he's happy in himself. I think he's as fit as he was last year. It's just that match fitness that's probably a query. But, yeah, pretty much doing everything similar to what he was last year. But, yeah, naturally, he is a year older and big ask for a 10-year-old to win a race like this.
Geez, a remarkable horse, isn't he? He won a Group 1 when he was 3, didn't he? Trained by Fred Kersley. And I think the Kersleys are still involved, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. Judith and Fred had still maintained a share of him, and you know, we were lucky enough to have their presence at the Cup last year. He came up for the last 3 days, which was awesome, and Greg Radley actually spoke to him on Cup Day after the race, and he gave a great explanation about, you know, what the horse meant to him and the rest of it. And I feel pretty privileged to actually have him in our stable. He's such an amazing animal. He holds a presence wherever he goes and catches everyone's eye. And, you know, he doesn't hold himself like a 10-year-old, that's for sure.
Last year, it was an odyssey across, I think it was the Gibb River Road or something from Broome. Was there any interruption because of Corona this year for him getting to Darwin?
Yeah, we had to spend a couple of weeks in Catherine, but you know, the major issue for us was not being able to get approval to go into the Broome area, even though that's where we live. It was classed as a biosecurity zone at the time, so we couldn't move horses from Perth into Broome, so we ended up only in Broome for about 5 days before we had to get to Catherine. So all the horses took a little bit of a knock, because you know, it's nearly 4,000 k's between sort of Perth and Catherine, and to only have 5 days break in between, you know, a fair ask. So that was probably a little bit of a hiccup, but you know, we were governed by paperwork and red tape, which is fair enough. It's bloody crazy times for everybody concerned, you know. So just had to roll with that if we really wanted to come, which is what we wanted to do.
Well, mate, we wish you the best today. You've got him in the Cup. You've got a couple of other nice runners on the day as well. Should we be playing anything else from your stable today?
Oh, they're probably 20s and above. And they're all a sneaky chance to run a tickie, but based on the form of the horses in those races, even though, you know, they're the best they've been since we've been here, I wouldn't imagine they'll be making too many surprises. I think the favourites in those particular races will be winning. So good each way at 20s or 30s or whatever it is, maybe have a sneaky, but otherwise, no.
All right, we're just all chips in on Itzy Him in the Cup.
Yeah, no, we're confident. Naturally, there's some nice horses in it. Everyone's got a tale to tell. But, yeah, we're confident. And, if the big fella turns up today and puts his best foot forward, I'm sure he's going to be right there. So, yeah, it's exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
Good on you, Rob. Best of luck, mate.
All right. Thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
Rob Gilberti, he's got the favourite Itzy Him in the Darwin Cup today. The definition of, I suppose, in this current period, being teased is when you get an invitation from the Darwin Turf Club to come up and join them on Darwin Cup Day.
Oh, that's just cruel. That's just cruel.
Hang on, do you know where we are?
Yeah. That was the story, one of the top five racing stories of last year, Fred Kersley's emotional interview after, you know, the great train of the Great Northern, what impact Itzy Him had. Just on the previous conversation, Richard Trembath's a loyal listener, they used to have the light used to light up at the 400 metre pole at Moonee Valley for time trials and sectionals and so on. So you got an indication of
vaguely remember.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. So I don't know
that's
why
some time ago now.
Tabcorp Park Melton should be thinking about something like that. And yeah, I think we're onto something. I think everyone understands what it's like to smash the clock. So
we're setting the agenda here, Matthew. That's what we're doing.
Back in the day, you would have been a
My father reminded me, there was a guy called Mr. Shea out on the Lurdidur Gorge Road, and we were driving out the SA. He goes, that was old Bill Shea. He said, when you used to win the 100 when you were 12 years old, he said, that boy of yours will win the store gift one day. That's a true conversation from about 2 days ago. My old man's probably not as sharp as he once was with these sort of recollections, but...
Did you ever get to still
let down a few people?
Have you seen my thighs? Have you seen my thighs and calves?
I have. I've got no interest.
Jason Richardson,
you have no interest in my thighs.
Could you put?
Hey, lockdowns. Mate, lockdowns making a lot of people strange, but not that strange.
Maybe we've got to put
a
third contender into the great match race between Simon Zara, Jason Richardson, and now Matt Stewart.
I'm too crooked.
Another contender has emerged.
Down 15 times.
You said that your maximum now is 20 metres.
About 10 years ago, before I'd crumbled, I dared Richo over a few beers to give me a head start because he doesn't know my deep secret of being actually very fast.
Right.
And he wouldn't bite because I think he saw the calves and thighs and thought, I'm not taking this guy on.
Okay.
Wow. This could be... Hey, you're in lockdown. This could be training.
This could be the health risk.
What, around the lounge room?
This could be your 5K radius once a day.
It's a squeaky,
for an hour.
Squeaky. He just put it in.
He did. There's a little bit of a...
Take a break. I'm being yelled at by everyone here. When we come back, a good news story. Andrew Clark, Living Legends, they had their horse's birthday fundraiser, and the response was astonishing.
Opinions. Everyone's got one. On RSN 927's The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. We've been talking during this COVID period about how racing participants and the coverage can engage with everyone. And social media, the guys in the UK have been doing it brilliantly. Asheen Murphy, and then I saw over the weekend that Charlie Fellows spoke throughout a race where he had a runner in. Things didn't go to plan, but it was great to see this put out on social media for everyone to get the insights.
Quite difficult to come from behind here, isn't it? So hopefully he'll jump the gates well and... he can get a nice position. Now you just hope that they all go in relatively quick.
He's going
time.
In quite early, is that a concern?
That's, you don't want to be stood in there too long. There's always a worry that they fall asleep, especially over a trip like this. Longer distance, not such a worry, but sharp tracks like this, you don't want him to fall out the gates. He's just mucking about in the stalls. Go on. Oh, and he's got squeezed. And that's not where we want to be. So we are in a bad position now. He's got squeezed out by two. He looked like he got a little bit worked up. He's running on, but it's all a bit too late. He's run a very nice race, considering, but you just can't win like that. He's run okay, but he's had to use a lot of ground up through the middle of the race, and... I think he's probably someone's back to winner over there. They're over the moon. Look at that. It's not gone how we wanted it to go, really.
Well done to Charlie, because he was gutted, and it's a lot better to watch it with the vision of the race.
I was thinking that when I listened to it.
Not a fan. But I just like to see that the trainers and the jockeys are opening themselves up to give an insight, especially during the running, and have that type of commentary. I would like to see a bit more of that. I think it's something that we can do and look outside the bubble for those to give an insight into what goes on. Something that you'll be hopefully a bit more interested in now, Matty Stewart, is Andrew Clark and the Living Legends, who had their horse's birthday fundraiser over the weekend. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Michael.
Now, you wanted to come on this morning and basically say thank you to everyone because you were blown away with the response. How much has been raised?
$85,000, Michael, which is just incredible given the times that we're in. You know, it was just the response we couldn't have imagined. And look, to be honest, we hesitated a little bit as to whether we'd go ahead with it. But given everything that was happening, and we thought, well, if people can donate, they will. And if they can't, we fully understand. Just an amazing response. And the feedback has just been incredible. You know, the love that people have shown us, all the work, a huge amount of work, but big, big thank you to everyone who's supported us. It's been an amazing response.
Andrew, can you put into terms what that amount of money means to the organisation? What does that actually do for the horses out there?
Well, for us, we've got to raise around about $500,000 a year to keep going. You know, there's, if it was just a little adjustment property, you know, you and I would probably run it with 25 old geldings on it. You and I would probably run it very easily. But it's an historic property. It's open 7 days a week. We've got a whole lot of work to do on paddocks and pastures and things. So it's a big bonus. And especially in this time, like the first round of COVID was a massive hit. And we adapted, like we lost all of our tour groups, bookings were just cancelled. And we, with the second round, it's been another hit. And it's not looking good for the spring carnival. Like we just don't have the tour bookings, etc., that are there. So this is a wonderful injection, a big, big help.
Well, there's no doubt about that, Andrew. And these are the fallout, the ramifications from these restrictions as well. And the horses still need to be fed and they still need to be cared for, which is what you guys do so well out there at Living Legends. And if you want to donate, you can still donate, can't you? What's the best way to do that, Andrew?
Yeah, you can go online. It's charity.com/livinglegends, or you can link in through our Facebook. We're going to close it off at midnight tonight, so if there's anyone can help out, that'd be just wonderful. But I've just got to say a big, big thank you again to everyone that's come forward and helped out, and all the incredible work. Like, it's a big job to run these campaigns. It just doesn't happen suddenly. And Belinda Myers and the crew at Legends, we've all worked really hard to make this work, but really the response has just been overwhelming.
Good on you, Andrew. You do such a brilliant job out there with all the Living Legends. If you want to donate, make sure you jump on. You can still do so today. Hopefully you get through the next period well, and we will be able to see you at some stage during the spring carnival, Andrew.
Yeah, no, we're fingers and toes crossed. Hopefully the spring carnival works out, but just so great to see racing continue. But we're going to have to go back and do a little bit of homework now on our 5 kilometre radius, because that's going to hit our... We've had a great trade with takeaway coffees and scones, etc. And I think we've got a little bit of work to do to work out where we're going to go from here.
Good luck with it all, Andrew.
Good on you. Thanks, folks. Thank you.
Andrew Clark, and don't forget, if you donate over $2, it is tax deductible as well. Gents, we end today's show with a little congratulations. Jai McNeil, a lot of people wondering why he didn't ride on Saturday. It was because he and his partner, Jess Payne, had a little bub on Saturday morning. So congratulations to Jai and Jess. There's a little budding jockey, no doubt.
A cute little bub too by Jai out of Jess, I would imagine. So that's great news for Jai. He's a terrific young fellow, as is Jess's great girl. Looking forward to... I'm going to chase up Amy McDonald. There's interesting story going on there. Looking forward to the distraction of the Darwin Cup and... bated breath, all of us.
1:30 today is what we're hearing at the press conference will be with the Premier, Daniel Andrews. And don't forget, we will have the Chairman of Racing Victoria on for an extended chat at 9 o'clock tomorrow. So all questions, hopefully, will be answered. If you have any tomorrow, send them through and we will put them to the Chairman, Brian Kruger. Gents, enjoy your 5K radius and your 1 hour of exercise today.
Yes.
Matt's got 45 minutes left over. What's he going to do with it?
I don't know. Work on those sprints.
Work on those thighs.
We will see you later. Don't go anywhere, though, because coming up next, we'll find you all the winners at Wodonga.